A thing that looks like a police box standing in a junkyard. It can move anywhere.
Haven, concentrate on Sin. Give priority to the detectors and the navigation systems.
There is a corridor. And the corridor is time. It surrounds all things.
On display, I eventually had to go down to the cellar.
That's the display department.
With a torch. The lights are probably gone. So had the stairs.
Yours is number 6.
I am not a number. I am a person.
Welcome to British Invaders, episode 337. This is the podcast all about British science fiction television, and this time we are talking about Count Dracula. This is Brian from Canada.
And this is Eamon from England. Hello.
We are talking about this 1977 BBC adaptation of that most famous of vampire stories, Bram Stoker's Dracula, and it's about a 2.5 hour adaptation.
And we have a star-studded cast in a BBC production, as you say, which gives us a pretty faithful version of the novel, one that's probably been recognised as one of the most faithful over the years. And can I say, Brian, that I'm somewhat excited about this one.
Very good. So why don't you talk about the setup for it?
Well, it is, of course, as we've said, quite faithful. So it's the original. So we have young Jonathan Harker making the difficult journey to darkest Transylvania, where he's going to help the mysterious Count Dracula with his purchase of and then move to Carfax Abbey in England. And that's the start. We know that from the novel, and here it is sort of faithfully reproduced for us, the terrible journey and then the strange castle and its owner.
Yes, absolutely. And of course, the castle itself has lots of hidden dangers for Harker, and the Count's strange nighttime departures and return, it all seems very mysterious to Jonathan Harker. Meanwhile, back in England, his friends and family are growing worried.
Yes, because it was supposed to be a fairly short visit, and of course it is extended by Dracula till Harker almost becomes a prisoner. And back in England, as well as the sort of troubled family and friends of Jonathan Harker, we also have the deeply disturbed inpatient in a hospital, the weird Renfield, who seems to be some sort of forerunner or giving the warnings of what's to come.
Yes, absolutely.
So getting to the characters, obviously we've started with Jonathan Harker, played by Bosco Hogan, the young lawyer who witnesses some truly terrible things in Transylvania, separated, as we said, from his family and friends back in England.
We also, of course, have Count Dracula himself, played by Louis Jourdain, who was Carmel Khan, the villain in Octopussy, and starred in lots of movies over many years. He was the leading man in Gigi, for instance. Really very well-known actor, and he is bringing this sort of suave sophistication to the part of Dracula, which is something that I think is quite faithful to the book rather than the more monstrous versions that some movies have given us.
It is a fascinating performance, which we will talk about in some detail. But yeah, he is very sort of charming and sophisticated as Dracula. It's great fun. And of course, if we have a Dracula, we must have an Abraham Van Helsing, played by another famous actor, particularly from British TV, Frank Finlay, taking on the Count as the knowledgeable expert on strange diseases and particularly the threat of the vampire. So yeah, you know, two great performances here, Jourdain and Finlay going head to head.
Mina Westenra, played by Judy Bowker, is Jonathan Harker's fiancée, who is increasingly worried by his absence and will, of course, come under threat herself and become a major part of this as the story goes on.
And you may notice a change in her surname, because we've also got Lucy Westenra, played by Susan Penhaligon, who in this version is Mina's sister. And of course, faithful to the original book, she is one of the victims of Dracula's deadly nighttime visits. So we do have one of the changes here from the novel, and that Mina becomes Lucy's sister instead of just being best friends in the book. It was Mina Murray in the book, of course.
We also have Renfield, played by Jack Shepherd, Dracula's crazed disciple who announces the arrival of his master and has this strange fascination with the blood of insects and small animals and is collecting insects and birds and so on, and seems, as we mentioned earlier, quite disturbed and unstable.
Yes, and Jack Shepherd looking particularly gaunt and drawn as Renfield, given another fine turn and sort of rounding out our cast of the familiars from the novel. All the major players are here.
Yes, absolutely. So Mina and Lucy take a holiday to the seaside town of Whippy, where they hear strange tales of a ship carrying boxes of dirt, boxes of earth.
Yes, of course. Why would they be carrying those to England? And, of course, it wouldn't be Dracula if there wasn't reports of strange deaths. Meanwhile, in Whitby, they visit Dr. Seward and his patient Renfield, of which we've mentioned. And of course, Lucy begins to fall ill herself, growing pale and weak with those strange marks on her neck, which tell us what's going on. But of course, the characters in this version and in the book are somewhat perplexed by it all.
And unable to cure her, Dr. Seward calls in his friend and mentor, Dr. Abraham van Helsing from Amsterdam, for a second opinion.
As you do.
Of course. And in the meantime, a rather disturbed Jonathan Harker has turned up in a convent hospital in Hungary and will make his way back home to England. And of course, the battle to save both Lucy and Mina, and then to confront the vampire, Count Dracula himself, has started.
The hunt is on.
Yes. We do get this sort of tale of two halves, where we have the head-to-head of Count Dracula and Jonathan Harker in Castle Dracula, where nothing too much has been revealed yet. And then we have the more adventurous take on things back in England, which is more the second half.
Yes, it is interesting. And of course, it's got plenty of screen time for this all to develop. So although we've raced through the earlier elements of the story, it's all given plenty of time. And some beautiful sort of filming at Whitby and at the Abbey and so on.
Yes, it really does.
So let's turn to our production notes. Of course, Bram Stoker's famous novel was published in 1897, has been adapted for theatre, for screens both large and small, hundreds of times. We covered an earlier British television adaptation when we touched on the 1969 ITV series Mystery and Imagination, back in episodes 220 and 221, where Denham Elliott played the nefarious Count Dracula.
Indeed. And in 1976, producer Maurice Barry approached the BBC talking about making a new adaptation of Dracula. And he may partly have been influenced by the success of the American adaptation of Frankenstein from 1974, which brought the character back a little closer to the book.
That's an interesting production, obviously outside of our remit. But yes, it's interesting to think of, you know, these versions from the 70s trying to get back to the book.
Yeah, well, I think the more monstrous versions of both of those characters, both Frankenstein's creature and Count Dracula, were pushed along by the 1930s Universal films, and the mythos of those sort of shifted.
Indeed, yes.
Philip Saville was brought in to direct, and he had this long and successful television career with The Lives and Loves of a She-Devil, The Cloning of Joanna May and Firstborn, and also The Boys from Blackstaff. And we've covered a couple of those.
Yes, what a, you know, what a great career on British TV. Those are some impressive shows.
Oh, yes. And Gerald Savory wrote the screenplay. He would later go on to adapt Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde for the BBC in 1980.
Which I think has David Hemmings playing the dual role. I'll have to hunt that version down. More of that later, perhaps.
Oh, interesting.
As we've said, this is a very faithful adaptation of Dracula, so there's very few changes from the original plot. We've mentioned that Mina and Lucy become sisters rather than best friends. You might notice that two of Lucy's suitors from the book are combined into one American character. So in the book, it was Quincy Morris and Arthur Homewood, and they become the character Quincy Homewood in this version, played by Richard Barnes. But otherwise, not an awful lot of changes. There is one towards the end of the production, which we can't really talk about, but it stayed pretty faithful to the book.
Yeah, I think the idea really was to keep it faithful to the book. And things like the number, reducing the number of characters, those are sometimes things that you have to do for time or for budget.
And of course, what a coup it must have been to secure Frank Finlay, but in particular, Hollywood sort of legend Louis Jourdan to play the title character. I should imagine the production team had a very good day when he signed on.
Yes, having Louis Jourdan there was definitely a big deal. And it was one of those combinations where not only was he this big name, but he was also a very good choice of casting for the character. The production used Hampstead Heath for the Transylvania scenes. And Anna Castle in Northumberland would become Castle Dracula. It would later be used in the Harry Potter films.
But of course, another Harry Potter connection.
There's always a Harry Potter connection with these, it seems. And unusually for adaptations of Dracula, they actually filmed in Whitby, which is nice to have Whitby playing Whitby rather than something else standing in for it. It's quite a prominent location in the book, so that was nice to see here.
And if you've visited Whitby, you'll know about the 199 steps from sea level up to the ruined abbey on the cliffs, and they feature in this version. So yes, it is lovely to see a bit of Whitby in there.
Yes, very nice, of course. And as was typical, certainly for BBC productions at the time, the interiors were shot on video with the exteriors on 16mm film. So you do have a different look to the exteriors as opposed to the interiors and set locations.
And we will talk about that a little bit more in our next episode, but I think that's something perhaps more noticeable with our sharper modern televisions than it was at the time, I think, Brian.
And we're also more used to having things done in different ways rather than doing that.
Indeed. Now, of course, this is a production with some very memorable images. Even if you haven't seen it, you may know the image of Dracula clinging to the walls of his own castle like a huge bat. And there was some fantastic atmospheric lighting, in particular another shot which you may be familiar with, of the light of a cross falling across Jourdan's face, which is very memorable and extremely well done. So there's some great stuff about this production, and it's produced some lasting images that have sort of resounded down the years since it was broadcast.
Absolutely.
And of course, as we've said, this is a BBC One production, a very sort of premier big box office production for the BBC, and so perhaps appropriately shown as a single 2 hours 30 minute film on the 22nd of December 1977. Interesting that the BBC choosing Christmas time to launch or to broadcast this huge show for them.
You would have thought it would more be a Halloween type of thing to go with, but that's what they did. It was repeated in January 1978, only a month or so later. But for that broadcast, it was actually split into three 50-minute episodes and shown over consecutive nights.
Interesting that they split it up.
And then later for American television, it would be broadcast around Halloween on PBS. And then the BBC would show it in 1993, and this time it was in two parts rather than one part or three parts.
Puzzling, but there you go. So that's what we've gleaned from the production notes. Availability. So, as ever, in Region 2, nice and straightforward, we have Count Dracula as a BBC To Entertain DVD release in 2007, which I've been looking at. This gives you the complete 150-minute version all in one go. Sadly, no extras, but actually I'm not too bothered because it costs £5 for the DVD at the moment. So it's a real bargain price. It's not on any of the streaming sites that I could find, but absolutely, you know, fairly cheap and easy to get hold of on this side of the pond. Of course, if we take a slightly difficult, perilous of journey across the world to Region 1, Brian, we find...
There was a release of this, also in 2007, BBC Home Entertainment, but I don't think there are all that many copies out there. It appears to be out of print, with copies going for $37 and more. I've seen some for over $100. So you may be able to find a deal on it, but it may be that going with a less expensive import from the UK might be a better idea.
Okay, but at least you can get hold of it, thank goodness.
Absolutely.
I suppose it goes without saying, of course, that Bram Stoker's novel, which we have read on this occasion, is widely available and very cheaply so as well, because I suspect it's long out of copyright, is it, Brian?
Yes, it would be in public domain in just about every country. And yeah, as you say, widely available, and there are so many different adaptations that are available in different forms.
And we'll talk about a few next time, when we will also talk about some other features of the story, particularly that made it into this version.
And we'll talk about some of the different interpretations of the infamous Count and different takes on the story as told in different ways at different times.
And of course, we'll give our own recommendations about this particular DVD release and whether you should be interested in it. I think you might be able to guess which way I'm going on that one, but that's more for next time.
Absolutely. So until then, you can find all of our past episodes at BritishInvaders.com, or if you search for British Invaders on Facebook, you can find our Facebook group there. And there are always good discussions happening there, so we'll be happy to talk about favorite adaptations of Dracula and what people think of the original novel and so on.
Or come along and find us at the Voice of Geeks Network at VogNetwork.com, where British Invaders is a proud member at VogNetwork.com.
Absolutely. So thank you for listening, and this is Brian from Canada signing off.
Yes, thank you very much indeed, and we look forward to your company next time. Until then, Eamon in England also signing off.